It's Saturday, the 27th of May, 2016. Happy birthday to Jerry West. To the Red Rock Basketball Monster Show, brought to you by Loot Crate and P-Dubs 120. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you're watching this show, which is the New York Knicks season in review show. I was going to wait until the end of the Cavs-Raps game 6, but it appears to be done with about 4 minutes left, so we're just going to go from now. If you are watching this show live on YouTube and you want to tweet at me any questions you might have regarding the Knicks or regarding anything really, you can do that by tweeting at me at redrock_bball. I mentioned this show was brought to you by P-Dubs 120, and that's great because he left a review on iTunes, and if you want to become like P-Dubs, all you need to do, and sponsor the podcast, all you need to do is leave that review on iTunes. It helps the show immensely, and you get to sponsor a show, so thank you to P-Dubs. As I mentioned, we are going to be talking New York Knicks in this podcast, so
let's get to it.
What I'm also excited about talking New York Knicks is I can do this.
Porzingis.
Yes, haven't heard that one for quite a while, but it's good to be able to talk some Porzingis again. We're going to talk New York Knicks as a whole. They finished the season 32-50. They had two coaches who, let's be honest, were horrible, Derek Fisher and the without peer, Kurt Rambis. Now, Fisher was horrible, but he was improving, and when you compare him to what Rambis did, it was like having Popovich out there. Rambis is one of the worst coaches in NBA history. All of the talk since the season ended was that Rambis was going to get the head coaching job. I don't really know what changed, whether James Dolan intervened, whether Phil had whether it was just misdirection from Phil Jackson that, you know, we're going with Rambis, we're only interviewing people that I've worked with or that I'm familiar with. It's only going to be the triangle. In next minute, we've got Jeff Hornacek as a guy who has no interaction with Phil Jackson, hasn't worked with Phil Jackson, doesn't run the triangle. But it is such an impressive move for the Knicks. Hornacek is not a world beater by any stretch. And he look, in his first season, he took the Suns almost to the playoffs, and from a team that was supposed to be one of the two, three worst teams in the league. It didn't go so well his second year. It was still pretty decent. And then last year he got fired. But the whole situation in Phoenix was not his fault entirely. The Markieff Morris issue was not on Hornacek. That was a front office thing. And yes, there were some blow-ups between Morris and Hornacek, but I think a lot of that was built up between, you know, Morris having the issues with the front office, becoming frustrated and taking it out on Hornacek. He had some weird things where he had to let's bench a guy if they get a tech rule. There was locker room issues in Phoenix. A completely different set of players, though, in New York, and I think it's going to be a tremendous improvement for the Knicks. Hornacek is a guy who, in his couple of seasons in Phoenix, ran at a very fast pace. So that's something that's, you know, impressive. The Knicks were the 26th team in pace last year. Hornacek was 8th in his first season with the Suns, and then I think he was 15th in the next full season. So, you know, pretty good numbers. He ran a top 8 offense in his first season as well, and he's going to be running at up-tempo, as evidenced by that increase in pace. He's going to be running more pick and roll. I think he will still run some triangle in New York. I don't think Phil will let it be completely abandoned, but heaps of teams run lots of triangle. They just incorporate parts of it, and the Warriors do. Lots of teams run parts of the triangle. They just need to not rely on it exclusively. They need to run more up-tempo, and they're going to do that. And I think it's going to be tremendous for a lot of the value of players on this team, and their fantasy value should increase. And a lot depends on what they do in free agency. They have no draft choices whatsoever, the New York Knicks. They are looking, apparently, to acquire a draft choice, whether that's by buying one or by trading players to get one. Not that they have a huge amount of assets, but it is always a possibility. They could... I'm just trying to think how best they acquire a draft pick. I'm not sure that they... I think probably they buy an early second, or they can trade someone. But there's not... As you'll see as we go through the roster, they don't have much in terms of assets. So maybe they do go without a draft choice, and free agency then becomes important because they are going to have a little bit of cap space, as is everybody. But there is the appeal of the New York Knicks market, and I think the fact that they didn't hire Rambis and are not going to be you're running the triangle exclusively, makes the team more appealing to free agents. They wouldn't have gotten a point guard if they had been running with Rambis or the triangle. They wouldn't have gotten anyone to come if Rambis had been the coach to a degree, because he's really, like, he is horrible. He's horrible communications. He runs horrible sets. He's got a horrible record. He horribly misuses players. The players don't like playing for him. He just does everything that's wrong about what a coach should do. But he's gone. I don't want to talk Rambis anymore, because you know what? I probably will, because when we talk about the value and issues with players through the season, a lot of it will be directed towards him. When we look at their team in terms of impending free agents, there's a few. We've got Aaron Aflalo, who has an $8 million player option. There was zero chance that Aflalo was coming back if Rambis was back in charge. But with Rambis gone, potentially he comes back. I say he still doesn't. I reckon at 30 years old, with 1 year left on an $8 million player option, I think he declines it. He looks for maybe 2 or 3 years. Maybe it's at $8 million, maybe it's at $9 million. I don't rate Aflalo at all. He still has value, but to me, it's as a backup. It's not as a starting shooting guard in the league. He's not good anymore. He was good 2-3 years ago. He just isn't anymore, but I still think he opts out. Derek Williams with a $5 million or $4.5 million player option, he almost definitely opts out. He's at he's at 25 years old, $4.5 million. He opts out. He showed flashes. He is not going to be a starting caliber player, but a bench player who can play 20 minutes, who plays the 3 and the 4, is high energy, is up-tempo, who showed an improvement, no reason he can't get a 3-year deal at $7 million or something along those lines, which I think is obviously a better result than playing a 1 year on a $4.5 million player option. In terms of other guys who are unrestricted free agents, we've got Sasha Vujacic, we've got Lou Amundsen, we've got Lance Thomas, we've got Kevin Serafin, and we've got Cleanthony Early and Langston Galloway are both restricted free agents. So lots of roster turnover. I think Galloway will be back as a restricted guy. Cleanthony Early, we haven't seen really anything from him. He's 25 years old. He got shot in the knee. He's had a lot of injury issues. He hasn't shown much when he's been out there. But yeah, you know, I like him. I think there's something to him. Maybe Hornacek likes him as well. And if it's just the qualifying offer that he gets, I think they bring him back and test it out. Vujacic, he would have definitely been back if Rambis was been there. Phil might still bring him back, but there is no way that a 32-year-old Sasha Vujacic should be playing meaningful minutes in the league. He should never have been starting for the times that he did last year. Him replacing Aflalo was ridiculous. Yes, he shot the ball ridiculously well to end the season, but he was horrific for most of the year. Not sure he'll be back. Lance Thomas at 28 years old, who's a lot older than you think, he was key to this team, and he only made $1.6 million last season. He'll be back because he was a real key part. He was part of some of their best lineups. Defensively, he put up some really good performances. Offensively, he is a bit of a struggle. You know, he doesn't do a huge amount. Hit the three at a decent rate, but I still think he'll be back. And who's the last? Kevin Serafin. Not sure. I really like Kevin Serafin. He didn't do a huge amount here with his team, and with a guy like Willie Hernan Gomez coming over, they might not have room to keep Serafin, so he might be gone. Tony Roten is on a non-guaranteed deal for next season. We'll talk about Roten later. But if you know anything about this podcast, if you've heard me before, you will know that Tony Roten is probably at about number 450 on my list of most liked NBA players. And that's assuming the list goes to 450. So we'll talk Tony Roten a little bit later. I'm sure you're all dying to hear my thoughts on him, even though I'm almost guaranteed you know what they are. Today's sponsor of the show is Loot Crate, as per usual. And if you don't know what Loot Crate is, check them out. It's a monthly subscription box service. It's for epic geek and gamer items and pop culture gear. It's less than $20 a month, and you get 6 to 8 items, including licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, and unique one-of-a-kind items. Head across to our unique URL, which is lootcrate.com/redrock, and enter the code REDROCK, and you save $3 off any new subscription. Just by visiting that website, it exposes you to what Loot Crate is, but it also helps this podcast a lot when I can go to other sponsors and go, look at how many people visit this website. They go to lootcrate.com/redrock and they show interest in the sponsors, and that's something that sponsors want to see. So even if you go, maybe it's not for me, check it out. Just head to that website, lootcrate.com/redrock, see what they've got to offer, and then if it tickles your fancy, go at it. Use that code, $3 on a new subscription. The code is not $3. Let's try that again. Use the code REDROCK and save $3 on your new subscription. Everybody wins. So thank you to Loot Crate for being a sponsor of today's show. All right, New York Knicks, let's get into their players. The first one I'm going to talk about is the player who finished with the highest ranking on this team, and no, it is not.
Percentages.
It is Carmelo Anthony, and I think a lot of people would be surprised at that. But Melo had a disappointing season to a degree, but still ended up pretty strongly. As the 35th ranked player in 9 cat leagues, 29th ranked player in 8 cat leagues. If you look at his punting value, he was at 38 in the 8-2. And he had an improvement post-All-Star. In 9 cat, went from 40 to 32. It's because Ramba started playing him just ludicrous minutes. And that's something that shouldn't continue, and it should never have happened. And one of the reasons why, you know, Ramba should never have been a coach, when the players have to come to him and say, look, mate, can you stop playing me? I don't want to play 40 minutes a night. And he keeps doing it. And there's eventually the whole team has to go, look, play the young guys. We don't need to play 35, 40 minutes a night. Melo was still good. He played 35 minutes a night for the season. He played 72 games after coming off that knee injury. 22 points, 1.5 threes, 7.5 rebounds, over 4 assists, which is a tremendous amount from Melo. Almost a steal, half a block, 43 and 83, and he shot 34% from 3. So the 3-point shooting, not ideal. He can be a better shooter than that, but he has shot 34% the last two seasons. But prior to that, he was at 40 and 38. So he's had a bit of a dip in his efficiency, but still really good. Like, you know, as I said, the best passing year of his career. One of the better years of his career in its entirety, just of the way that he played. Not necessarily with all of his stats, but he just was better. He was more involved. He was not an offensive black hole, which is something that people do say about him, but it's not necessarily always true. He can move the ball around. He can do, you know, numerous things for this team. He led the team in win shares, which is not unsurprising. Out of the regular players, he finished second in win shares per 48. He led the team in box score plus minus, unless I'm counting Jimmer Fredette's 5 minutes that he played, where he ended up leading the team in box score plus minus. Of course, that's not accurate. He led the team in VORP. He led the team in PER, again, excluding the 11 minutes combined that Jimmer Fredette and Thanasis Antetokounmpo played. He was their best player for all the hype that Porzingis gets, and rightfully so. Melo was the team's best player. Now, as we move forward, Melo's 32 years old. Is he the best player next season? He probably is for one more year, but after that, is he? I would have to say probably not after that. We hear rumors coming out about the Knicks trying to explore trades. We know about his no-trade clause. We know about his 15% trade kicker as well, which is going to net him a huge amount of money, considering he's going to be paid $24.5 million next season and then $26 million the year after that. That trade kicker is a big amount. And who takes him on? What sort of assets do the Knicks get back? Regardless, we know that he is not on the same timeline as Porzingis. There's 12 years age difference between the two. And as Melo starts to decline, which will start to happen probably next season, maybe the year after, he hasn't got long left at, or he's going to be a 20-point scorer, you know, Porzingis will start to enter his prime. But for now, Melo is putting up, you know, solid numbers. And where do you have to take him next year? I reckon that given the fact that Porzingis is there, given the talk of Melo being, you know, on the downside and tradable, and the general just negativity towards Melo's game, you look at a guy that finished and said 29th in 8 cat leagues, you won't have to pick him at pick 29. I wouldn't have thought. I reckon you can get him probably outside the third round in a lot of spots. And if you can get him outside the third round, it's a massive bargain because he's still going to average 20 points. The team's going to play up tempo. I think he's going to work pretty well in Hornacek's system. I think he'll be a decent passer. I think if he plays the four more full time, it's going to be fantastic for him. Maybe give him an extra one rebound a game. Maybe increase his field goal percentage by 1 or 2%. Maybe get his 3-point percentage back up with more ball movement, with more pick and rolls, with more up tempo stuff. I think that he can put in a season where he challenges for the top 25. Might not get there. I wouldn't be drafting him in the top 25, definitely. But at the end of the third round, in the fourth round, if you get Melo there and get your 20, you could potentially get 20 points, 8 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal, 1.5 threes, 80% free throws, 45 from the field. These are really, really good numbers. And I think Melo can do it for one more year. After that, it gets a little bit dicey for Dynasty League players. I'm not sure what it means for Melo moving forward, or how good he's going to be, but I reckon you can count on one more top 50 season, or so one more top 40 season from him, and maybe one more after that top 50 season, and then he's probably going to really start to decline. He'll be 34 years old by that stage when he's heading into that $27 million player option on his contract, and I reckon we'll see a pretty sharp decline. Actually, no, that's not true. I'll rephrase. We'll see a decline, not a sharp decline, because I think Melo's game is suited to aging because he's not athletic. He's not a big... Of course, he's athletic. He's a he's an elite NBA player. He's not super athletic. He doesn't rely upon athleticism. He relies upon shooting. He doesn't rely upon, you know, smashing in on drives and layups and dunks and all that sort of stuff. He relies on his, you know, his moves, his scoring ability, his now newfound ability to pass, his rebounding. He relies on all that stuff. He doesn't rely on insane athleticism. So that is a good thing for him moving forward. Now, whether he plays 35 minutes and gets 21 points, probably not going to happen in 3 years. But could he play 30 minutes and average 17 points? Absolutely. And become a guy that's ranked in the 70s in 3 years' time? Absolutely. So don't think that he's going to be completely toast. But I reckon he's got two more top 50 years in him and definitely a potential of a top 25 to 30 season next season. Kristaps Porzingis. A lot to like about him, obviously. Turned in a really surprising rookie season to some. I was surprised that he did as well as he did because I didn't think that the Knicks were going to give him minutes. There was so much talk in the... Basically, at this stage, anything that Phil Jackson says, you have to think the opposite will happen. All this talk, you know, we'll probably look to give him 20 minutes a game. That was a load of shit. They started him and they played him big minutes, as they should, because he was clearly the best player on this team, and that was something that I talked about in the preseason. This guy is the best big man on this team by a big stretch, and he had to have played big minutes, but we had no confidence that Phil Jackson was going to do it, so therefore I didn't draft him anywhere. I couldn't envisage picking him inside the top 100 because everything coming out of the Knicks was like, nah, he's not going to play. He has to get acclimated to the game. From game one, he was really good, and he was the guy. He was clearly the best guy on that team, the best big man on that team. It was very clear from Summer League, you know, from before Summer League, I was convinced he was the best big man on this team. At Summer League, I loved everything that he did, but I was not convinced that Derek Fisher and Phil Jackson were going to give him minutes. Turns out they did, and it turned into a great season. He was the 9th ranked, sorry, that's not true. He was the 50th ranked player in 9 cat leagues, the 55th ranked player in 8 cat leagues, but he tailed off. Post All-Star in 9 cat, 80th. In 8 cat, 83rd. It's a big drop off. When you look at, you know, a 9 cat pre and post from 37 to 80, a big drop off. But I can attribute most of that to Rambis, who played him out of position, who took away the pick and pop, which is something he thrived in, which is just a stupid... This is what it is. This is what Rambis is.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to this. He's an idiot. All right, that's what we got to say about that. You know, he's an idiot.
Why would you take away the best move from your best, your second best player, your best building block moving forward? Let's take away what he thrives in. Let's play him at the three. Let's limit his minutes. Let's sit him on the bench and play him 20 minutes because he got two early fouls. It was just ridiculous, and that's what dropped Porzingis' value. It wasn't rookie wall related. I know people will talk rookie wall, and I'll argue till I'm blue in the face against the rookie wall. It just does not happen. Rookies get better as the season go on. They don't get worse. As a general rule, you might have 3 rookies that get worse, you might have 15 that get better. So you know that I hate the term rookie wall, and it was not the case here. It was a Rambis wall. That was what caused the Porzingis decline. So I'm not concerned about that moving forward. I am almost guaranteed that he'll be better than a top 50 player next season. Almost guaranteed. But if people look at what happened at the end of the season and go, maybe they got it figured out, maybe he's not right, they're going to be really, really wrong. We look at what Porzingis did. He averaged 28 points a game. He averaged 28 minutes, 14.5 points. He hit 1.1 threes, 7.3 rebounds, which I thought would be a big deficiency in his game, his rebounding, but that's a big number. 0.7 steals, 1.9 blocks, 42 and 84, and hit 33% of his threes. As a rookie, that 42% as a big man is not something you're encouraged by, but it will go up. He should approach 45% next season. He should be able to get to 35% from three. He's already an awesome free throw shooter. And one of the interesting things about him in terms of what happened at the end of the season, he started taking more free throws. So his last 13 games of the year, he took 4.3 free throw attempts. That's a big jump up. As I said, Rambis didn't play him as many minutes down the stretch, and that did limit what he was able to do rankings-wise. But putting him in a better position in an up-tempo offense with more pick-and-rolls under Hornacek, we should be seeing a really, really big season from Porzingis. How big? Not sure just yet. He finished third on the team in win shares at 4.3. He finished 7th in win shares per 48. His box score plus minus put him 5th on the team. It was a slight positive. He needs to work on his offense. He was a negative in offensive box score plus minus, but that's because his shooting percentage was so low. but defensively as a rookie to come up with a 0.9 box score plus minus is really positive numbers. He blocks shots almost two a game. He is going to improve offensively. As I said, we can expect a pretty decent field goal percentage increase. I think he gets his threes up there. That will mean that his scoring will increase. We'll see, instead of 14 points a game, there's a chance he goes to 16, maybe 17. He could easily be a guy that's a triple one. He averaged 1.1 threes, 0.7 steals, and 1.9 blocks. No reason he can't be a one steal, two block, one and a half, three sort of guy. I've got tremendous, tremendously high hopes for Porzingis, as I had before last season, and he blew them out of the water. Tailed off, but that does not concern me in the slightest. Really excited about what Porzingis can do next season. You're not going to be able to acquire him in a dynasty league, I wouldn't have thought, unless you're paying a huge amount. But this is a guy with top 30 upside, higher. This is a guy with top 20 upside over the next 4 years or so. And if he's not a top 40 player next season, I will be stunned at that development. He has definitely got, to me, if you're picking him in the first three rounds, it's not a mistake for next season. I reckon that's where he takes that jump. If he finished 50th already this year, he goes another step above that. Now, I'm pretty sure he can take it into the 40s, no doubt, and he can easily finish inside that top 30, top 35. No concerns about that whatsoever. Really excited to see what he does with a proper coach, and hopefully with some more talent coming in. It's going to be super exciting for our boy Porzingis. Robin Lopez. He was a guy that actually played better under Rambis. He finished the season 84th in 9-cat leagues, 93rd in 8-cat, but the pre and post split, we go 114/56. That's a big jump because Derek Fisher misused him. He would play him just baffling minutes, 18 minutes, 18 minutes, 30. And when he played 30, he'd go fantastically. And then Fisher would go, nah, you know what? We probably should play him 20 minutes. Just moves that didn't make sense. Lopez is a very underrated player. He had a horrible season in Portland in his last season there. Absolutely disgusting. But bounced back and actually put up some numbers that we hadn't seen from him in his career. In putting up more rebounding numbers than what he had in other attempts. 27 minutes, 10-7 he averaged. He got 1.6 blocks. He shot 54% and 80% from the field and from the line. These are great numbers, and that's part of his value, just being an elite percentage guy, a decent scorer, a good shot blocker, you know, nice rebounds. He played all 82 games, but what does it mean for him moving forward? Porzingis' best position is center. Now, does he become a full-time center next season? That's probably up for debate, but I reckon by year three, Porzingis is the full-time starting center on this team. I would love to see Mallow at the four, Porzingis at the five, and that be their main front court lineup. Lopez off the bench playing 20 minutes, spelling Porzingis, absolutely fine as well. So to me, there's a slight concern that Lopez, especially second half of the season, doesn't play the minutes. And he goes down to playing 22 minutes a night, 23 minutes a night. That's a concern. He's not someone you should be having massive high hopes for dynasty-wise. Oh, Robin Lopez, maybe he breaks out. I think we know who Robin Lopez is at this point. Decent rebounder, good shot blocker, good percentages. That's the contribution you get from Lopez. Yeah, relatively low turnovers as well. That's what he gives you. Also a great guy to have on the court in terms of a box-out specialist. When other players play with him, they rebound the ball better. He provides a big body, he shepherds guys away, and enables guys like Porzingis to come in and grab these rebounds, enables Mallow to come in and grab his 7.5 rebounds a game. So maybe the Mallow-Porzingis combination, they would both suffer there if they don't have Robin Lopez next to them, but having those guys as three options at the four and five, Mallow, Porzingis, and Lopez is a pretty good three-man rotation. Now, the Knicks have got a dearth of wing talent, so Mallow is going to have to play the three, you know, for a bit of time, unless they can attract a wing free agent, Nick Batum. That would be awesome if they could bring in that guy who plays on the wing and enabling Mallow to go almost full-time to the four, which is what he's going to have to do as his career winds down. So I see the arrow pointing down for Robin Lopez. I do like what he does, definitely. But just given the fact that Porzingis is better at the five and Mallow is going to transition to the four, where do the minutes come for Lopez there? Now, he had a tremendous advanced stat season. He finished second on the team in win shares at 5.8, just behind Mallow. He was third on the team in win shares per 48. And the two guys ahead of him are two guys that I'm not counting, Fredette and Antetokounmpo. So led the team in win shares per 48. His box score plus minus came second on the team behind Mallow. He was third on the team in defensive box score plus minus. He was a positive in offensive box score plus minus. He was second on the team in VORP. He had an above average PER, just almost exactly the same as Porzingis. 17.6 for Lopez, 17.7 for Porzingis. A very, very underrated player. But the arrow is pointing down. So Dynasty League guys, this is probably peak Robin Lopez. Those rankings we saw from last year, 84 and 93, that's peak. Is he still worth drafting in standard leagues next year? Depending on how free agency plays out, I would say absolutely. But where do you do it? In the 11th round? Do you grab a guy that's not going to hurt your percentages and is going to offer you 1.5 blocks and 7 rebounds? That's an okay pick in the 11th or 12th round, but I don't see the upside for him because I just see that, you know, maybe he loses 2 minutes next season. Maybe he loses 4 minutes the season after that. There is some uncertainty to me with what Lopez brings moving forward. The next player we're going to take a look at is Jose Calderon. Now he finished 134th in 9-cat leagues, 143rd in 8-cat leagues, battled injuries, battled poor form, battled atrocious defense, tailed off after the All-Star break. He will not be the starting point guard next year. I think there is zero chance that he is that starting point guard. He played 28 minutes a night in 72 games. That won't happen again. He averaged 7.6 points, 1.2 threes, 3 rebounds, 4 assists. They're nice numbers. A steal, yep, 46% and 88. Awesome percentages. Hit 41% of his threes. Great. He is a perfect backup point guard. Now, he will likely still remain in New York because unless they're doing some, you know, fancy trading to unload the contract that he is on, which is $7.7 million for next season. It's not a long-term commitment, obviously, but $7.7 million at 34 years old is not an ideal contract, but he is a perfect backup point guard. But backup point guards don't play 28 minutes. And in 28 minutes, if he averaged 7.5 points and 4 assists, and he goes down to playing 20 minutes, 21 minutes, then what's he averaging? 5 points, 3 assists? There's no value in Calderon there. He'll be an interesting guy to stream in for assists. Hey, I need 3 assists, 4 assists. Who can give it to me? Oh, Jose Calderon's around, and he won't hurt my percentages. He's a good shooter from the field. He's an excellent 3-point shooter, one of the best free throw shooters in the NBA or in NBA history, to be honest. And he'll help in all those areas, but his defense is absolutely atrocious, and that is a concern for him, and that will limit his playing time. We look at his advanced stats, they were pretty good. Fourth on the team in win shares, behind the three guys I've already talked about, Melo, Lopez, and Porzingis. Defensive box score plus minus actually wasn't terrible. Negative 0.6, much better than you expect from a guy who's an absolute sieve on that end a lot of the time. You know, sixth on the team in box score plus minus, and some pretty good numbers coming from him last season. But you know that it's trending down, and he won't be a top 150 player next season. There is zero chance in my mind that he will become that guy next year. So if for some reason you've got him in a dynasty league, which you very well could have, because we know the way that dynasty leagues work, that you hang on to these players, and he's been providing value. It's just going to drop off tremendously. So if there's a way to include him in a trade, or if someone believes that Hornacek will bring one more year out of him, they're wrong, but absolutely do that. Just got to judge how everything plays out. But to me, there is zero chance that he is a starting point guard next season. Aaron Aflalo, he is really just not a good basketball player. He ranked 172 in 9-cat leagues, 181 in 8-cat leagues. He had a split of 130/273 for pre and post in 9-cat leagues. And that post is disgusting. But that's partly Rambis-induced, benching him, playing him less minutes. And I've got absolutely no problem with benching Aflalo because he's not a starting caliber player. But you had to have someone who you were going to play above him who was good. Hey, if you're going to drop him down to the bench and put Langston Galloway in there, absolutely, perfect move. Not to put in a guy who's worse, and that is Saša Vujačić. Now, Aflalo finished the season playing 33 minutes a game. It's a lot of minutes. But the thing is we hear Aflalo and everyone hypes up Aflalo. Everyone was very big on Aflalo in the preseason. I'm adding Aflalo, need to draft him. Who else is going to score? This is what he does. Yeah, he's a scorer, but he also averaged 12.8 points. It is a negative contribution in fantasy. In a standard 12-team league, you need about 14 points to be an average contributor. He wasn't. He hit 1.3 threes. That was barely above average, barely a positive contributor in that category. He then had 3.7 rebounds, below average, 2 assists, below average, 0.4 steals, well below average, 0.1 blocks, below average, 44% from the field, below average, free throws, 84%, great, 1.8 attempts. So such a minimal contribution in so many areas. And that's the problem with Aflalo, is that he used to be a guy who was he's a 3 and D, he's a scoring guard, cool, but he doesn't score enough. He has games where he's very much up and down, where he might go out and score 25 points, and then he'll score 3 points. Where does Aflalo land? I don't think he's got a spot as a starting shooting guard somewhere. I think his role, he probably thinks he is still a starting shooting guard. Maybe some dumb team gives him a contract like the Kings and starts him over McLemore, which is fine because McLemore hasn't been great, but why would you do it to a guy who's 30 years old? As a Fly Low is, who's been showing, you know, severe signs of decline the last couple of seasons. He's not a standard league guy. He wasn't a standard league guy last season. He wasn't a standard league guy the year before that. He won't be a standard league guy again next season. Even if he plays in New York, starts and plays 30 minutes under Hornacek, I don't see it. He just doesn't do enough to me. He doesn't move the ball. He doesn't do enough defensively with stats. He doesn't rebound. His field goal percentage is poor. Yes, he contributes a little bit of threes. The points are not there. He just doesn't do it for me. He is just a completely overrated player in a fantasy circle. In his box score plus minus, he finished worse than Sasha Vujicic, so that's saying something. He was a negative on offense. He was a negative on defense. He finished 7th on the team in win shares. His win shares per 48 placed him in the bottom third of the team, 12th. Really just not good numbers. He was a 10.9 PER. He's not good. And if you've got him and someone wants him, get rid of him. He's not getting better at age 30. He's not getting an opportunity where he plays 33 minutes a game like he did this season. These things are not happening. So he'll be on his way down. He'll be getting worse. And you can move on from him. I'm pretty confident of having no shares in Aaron Aflalo in any standard leagues next season, and I don't own him in any dynasty leagues, and I don't plan on doing it moving forward. Langston Galloway. I'm interested in seeing what Langston Galloway does. He's not a star by any stretch. He finished 174th in 9-cat, 202nd in 8-cat leagues. Again, had a big second half drop-off like the majority of the team because it all, as I said, the fish rots from the head down. Once you have a decline, and it's really hard to take a step back from Derek Fisher as a coach, but they did. Everyone else basically dropped off. I think with the exception of Robin Lopez was the only player who got better in the second half of the season. And that's not true. Jerian Grant had a bit of an increase, and so did Sasha Vujicic. But pretty much everyone else got worse in the second half of the season. Galloway played all 82 games. He played 25 minutes a game, but 7.6 points, 1-3, 3.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, a steal, 39 and 75 is his percentages. He had a bit of a surprise as a rookie season, definitely. A guy that probably took the NBA, not by storm, but I think shocked them a little bit. Who's this guy? He needs to improve his shooting. He's a 34% shooter from 3, 35 in his rookie year. Hasn't hit 40% in his career yet from the field. Decent ball handler, average 2.5 assists. These are okay numbers, not a bad defender. But what happens with him moving forward now? I said, as a restricted free agent, I'm pretty sure that he'll be back in New York. That would be my anticipation. And to me, he should be the guy they're grooming as either the sixth man on this team, or if they don't manage to get a shooting guard, he'd be the guy that I want to play as a shooting guard. I think that Hornacek's got history in being able to use dual ball handlers. Not that it worked all that well when they had the three guys there, but Dragic and Bledsoe, he could do it with both of those guys. And Galloway's not a full-time point guard, but he's a guy who can handle the ball to a degree, can move the ball, can hit threes at a decent rate, can defend at a decent level. I think that we see an improvement from him. I think that instead of being 174th, he was 110th in his rookie season. So I think that he can definitely take a step up from that and get close to that 120 mark. Heading into his third season, maybe he has a big breakout. I am pretty interested to see what Galloway can bring. Is he a guy that I'm banking a lot on? No. Would I be spending a lot to get him? Absolutely not. But say you're in a 14-team dynasty league and Galloway is sitting on the waiver wire, I'd be scooping him up and just seeing exactly what I can do. It depends on who I'm dropping, but I think that he can be a pretty solid top 150 player next year with the potential to jump inside the top 100. I think the Hornacek system will suit him. I think we could see a guy averaging 3.5 assists, 1.5 threes, 12 points. These are okay numbers. If he gets himself up to 41, 42% from the field, hits his 80% free throws, that's a nice guy in that sort of area. And I do think that we know he's young. He's had no one who's been a good coach. Derek Fisher and Kurt Rambis is two coaches. He needs development. He's still got a long way to go, but I think that this could be a real turning point season for Galloway. And again, with Calderon not getting 28 minutes a night, with a Aflalo likely out of the picture, depending on free agency, but they might bank on Galloway and go, we want to play him 27, 28, 30 minutes a night as our starting two, or as our sixth man who plays 27 minutes playing the one and the two. This is all conjecture at this point, but I do think that he has value, and I am interested to see the way that the Knicks approach this offseason with him. If you look at win shares, he was clearly ahead of Aaron Aflalo at 3.3. His win shares per 48, not so good, but still, you know, solid, sitting at ninth there. His box score plus minus, he was not so great in that metric, but still pretty solid, finishing seventh on the team and just a negative 0.4, so just minorly, that doesn't sound right, just barely below average, but otherwise pretty decent numbers from him. He handles the ball brilliantly in terms of his turnover percentage. He was fourth, and we're not going to include Thanasis. He was third on the team in turnover percentage at less than double digits, and that's pretty good for a guy who's especially dishing 15.7% assist rate. And we look at his overall just raw box score numbers. He turned the ball over 0.7 times. And 2.5 assists. That's tremendous. We're talking about almost a 3.5 assist to turnover ratio. And again, he can be a secondary ball handler. I do really like Langston Galloway, and I think there is something to be said for looking at him moving forward in your dynasties, not as a really top level producer, but as a guy who can put up top 100 numbers. That's not crazy to think that. Maybe I am crazy, but if so, I am. Whatever. Derek Williams. This is where the drop-off starts to begin with the Knicks. He finished 274th last season, 278th in ACAT leagues. But to say that his season was a failure, I think is incorrect. He played 80 games. He played 18 minutes. He looked good. 9.5 points, 0.6 threes, 3.7 rebounds, an assist, half a steal, 45 and 76. Just nice, solid numbers. Now, he can't hit threes. He hit 29% of them this season. He needs to improve that. But when he was given opportunities when Melo was out and he would start, he would look not out of place. Now, he's not a starting level player to me in the NBA. I think that he is a really solid backup 3/4 who can deal with 20 minutes a night. And that's why he's going to opt out and get more than 4.5 million. He might get 3 years at 7 million or whatever it is. He's going to opt out. He's going to find himself. He might find himself back in New York, but he showed that he has a value as a high energy player, a really aggressive rim runner, a guy who can score, who can rebound the ball, who can just provide energy to a team. And I think that can be valuable. So I am interested in seeing what Derek Williams does. Now, does it translate into fantasy? No, not really. He's got a chance to maybe be a top 200 player at some point, but I don't really think he gets much better than that. He's already 25. He's got a couple more years left to sort of improve, but not really much. I think that takes him inside the top 200, so the deeper league guys will want to pay attention. But to me, he's more just going to be a streamer guy. Mallow's out. They could also run and go, let's start Derek Williams at the 3. Let's put Mallow at the 4, and let's put Porzingis at the 5, and really try and develop this guy. It would be interesting. Would it work? I doubt it. But it's a way they can go, because, again, they don't have much depth on the wing. There's Derek Williams. There's Cle'Anthony Early. And there's Mallow. And two of these guys, one's a restricted free agent in Early, and we've got Williams, who's going to opt out and become an unrestricted free agent. So there's room there for him to grow. I don't know what it necessarily means for him moving forward as to whether, in terms of his fantasy value. I don't think it means a huge amount, but deeper dynasty leagues, if you've got 300 players rostered, then absolutely he's a guy who's in that almost top half of players, not quite in the top half, but around that 200 mark is where he can jump to. But 250 is probably the more prudent bet. Kylo Quinn, as you well aware, I am a huge fan of Cock. He is a guy that I think has been underutilized, just dreadfully underutilized in Orlando in his last season there. I think the Knicks got a bit of a bargain when they traded for him, but even in New York, he struggled. Now, his per 36 numbers are always off the charts. He was 36th in 9-cat per 30. Sorry, that's not true. He was 68th in 9-cat per 36 value. He was 42nd in 8-cat per 36 value. These are really good numbers, but he can't stay on the court long enough. That is the concern. If you give him 25 minutes, he is a dead set, absolute certainty to be a standard league guy. Absolutely. But where is he getting them? He's not getting them ahead of Porzingis. He's not getting ahead of Mallow. He's not getting them ahead of Robin Lopez. He's probably a 20-minute guy at best, and that means he's more of a 16-team league guy. Now, he did struggle again this season, but he only played 12 minutes a game. He still averaged 5 points, 0.1 threes, 4 rebounds and assists, 0.8 blocks, 0.3 steals, and was 48 and 78 as his percentages. These are pretty good numbers. But it's coming down to this point that what does he do moving forward? Now, he signed at a really cheap rate of less than $4 million for the next two seasons and a $4 million player option in 2018-19. He's 26 years old. Maybe Hornacek really likes him. I can see Hornacek liking him because I think that he's a guy that can, you know, can sort of stretch out, hit a shot. He's not a great three-point shooter, but he can shoot him. He's a great shot blocker. He's a pretty good defender. He's a pretty aggressive rebounder. I think there's a lot to like with Kylo Quinn, and I might be in the minority, but if he gets an opportunity, if you see a chance where Kylo Quinn is playing 25 minutes, he will be a top 150 player. There is zero doubt about that in my mind. He will easily be a top 150 player. He plays 30, 32 minutes a night. He's top 75. He's got massive upside because he does so much in so little time. Now, we know that Fisher didn't like it. We know that the Magic and Jacques Vaughn didn't like it the last season. But Hornacek could very easily come in and say, okay, we're playing him at the 4, Porzingis at the 5, Mallow at the 3, done. There's our starting lineup. You know, that's obviously excluding Robin Lopez, which is not a great idea. But O'Quinn's a guy who all takes is one injury as well to him to really thrust into a big role. In a dynasty league, you need to be able to just stash him and hold him and hope for something to happen, because the chances of it happening is probably 10%. But when it does happen and when he does work into a role, it's going to turn into a massive payday for you. In terms of his advanced stats, which is a pretty decent way of looking at just how a guy contributed across the board in the minutes he played, he finished 6th on the team in win shares per 48, so ahead of Kristaps, ahead of Galloway. Yeah, that's not bad. His box score plus minus, pretty impressive. 3rd on the team, behind Mallow and Robin Lopez. Defensive box score plus minus, led the team comfortably, 2.5. The next best was Kevin Seraphin at 1.5. He is a really good defender. He had a VORP of 0.5, so a better than average player. He had a PER of 17.5, so super efficient as well, and again, above average. But he doesn't get enough playing time to register in a fantasy setting. That's all that we need for this to happen, and this shakeup could amount to him getting, instead of 11 minutes a game, which was ridiculous, him getting 18, him getting 20 minutes. He is someone to watch for. He's at this point, he's nowhere near a standard league draftable guy, but in a deep bench dynasty, he's someone I want to hold on to, and I want to see what happens this season, because in the next 2 years, he could, again, 10% chance, but he could be a top 100 player. You can't say that about many players. I know a lot of people disagree with me about Kylo Quinn, but I am a huge fan. If we look back to one of the seasons he had in Orlando in 2013-14, when he was actually used more correctly, he played just 17 minutes a game there and finished 177th. And there were stretches when he was starting and he was a must-own player. He averaged 6-5 with 1.3 blocks and shot 50% from the field, had 0.6 steals in 17 minutes. His per 36 numbers in that year, he was the 35th ranked player. He averaged 13-11 with 2.7 blocks and 1.2 steals and 2.5 assists. He can do it. Again, I don't want to talk too much about Kylo Quinn, but you know that I'm a big fan. Lance Thomas, really integral part of this team, and the team did drop off when he suffered that knee injury, but fantasy-wise, he's no good. He finished 295th in 9-cat leagues, 291st in 8-cat leagues. He just doesn't do it statistically. He played only 59 games again with that knee injury, but 22 minutes, a key contributor off the bench, 8 points, 0.7 threes, 2 rebounds, 0.9 assists, half a steal, 44 and 86 is his percentage. But he did shoot 40% from 3, and that's where he developed into being a key cog, because all of a sudden, a guy that was honestly terrible when he was in Oklahoma City came across and struggled in his first year in New York. But when you go from 32% from 3, and in fact, his two seasons prior to that he'd played for the Pelicans, where he did not hit a three at all, he goes from 0% to 32% to 40%. It's a big, big jump, and it makes him all the more valuable. Now, where does he fit in? When I was talking wings, I completely forgot to mention Lance Thomas. He is a free agent, but I do imagine that he'll be back on this team, and the team will want him back because he does provide something team cohesion-wise. He is able to help out... defensively, he's able to not necessarily shut down guys, but he's able to be a pest in that sense. But where does he go fantasy-wise? I don't see him really ever becoming better than this. Will he ever have a season where he shoots better than 40% from three? Will he ever average double digits in scoring? Will he doesn't rebound the ball. He doesn't get defensive stats. He shoots threes, but that's really all he brings. Like him, key part of the bench unit should be brought back. But at 28 years old, what's his future hold? To me, there is no upside for him in dynasty leagues. I would be happy to trade him if someone believes in him and thinks that he can challenge the top 200. I don't think he can challenge the top 200. I think that the top 250 is a bit of a stretch for Lance Thomas at this point. Let's talk the guy that I'm probably the most interested in for next season, and that is Jerian Grant. He was horrifically misused on this team. I was excited about them bringing him over in exchange for Tim Hardaway in the draft because they didn't have a point guard. Yes, they had Jose Calderon, but they didn't have a point guard of the future. Now, Grant was lost at times on the court, and that contributed to some of his lack of playing time. But the fact that they just wouldn't go with him until the season was almost ended was disgusting to me in terms of a team development point of view. Now, he finished 339th in 9-cat and 320th in 8-cat. That's terrible, but a big jump when he got the minutes. 251st 9-cat post-All-Star, 215th 8-cat post-All-Star. He is a guy to have a look at. His season numbers aren't great. 17 minutes, 5.5 points, 0.3 threes, 2 rebounds, 2.3 assists, 0.7 steals, 39 and 78. But the thing that's really holding him back is 22% from three. Now, he is an older rookie. He was a senior coming out of college, but that's okay. I think that we saw the last 2 months of the season, he averaged 27 minutes a game, 11.5 points, a three a game, three rebounds, 3.5 assists, 1.4 steals, 46 and 67 is his percentages, and went up to 30% from three. And that's not great, but it's better than 22%. If he takes it up to 34 next year and gets his field goal percentage at 45%, because he can have a high field goal percentage because he's a good attacker of the rim. And with the pick and rolls that this team is going to start running and a more modern offense, I think that he can really, really start to thrive next season. Now, is he a top 100 player? I would be stunned if he was a top 100. And I wouldn't be stunned. I would be mildly surprised. But he is a guy that I would be looking at taking in the last part of drafts, assuming that no one else comes in as a free. If Mike Conley comes in, of course, forget about it. But if they go in with Galloway, Grant, and Calderon as their three point guards, then once we get outside the top 100 in drafts, I'm taking him. Because maybe they give him 30 minutes, and then he develops into a top 70 player. There's a chance of that. Because you take your three-point percentage up, he gets five assists a game, he hits 1.2 threes, he averages 13 points. These are possibilities for him. They're not massively likely, but they are possibilities. So I do like being able to acquire Jerian Grant in a dynasty league, if you can. Of course, it depends on how much you're paying, but I do like being able to acquire him. Now, he was a net negative box score plus minus wise on defense and offense last season. He had a box score plus minus of negative 3.4, one of the worst on the team. Win shares, he was at a putrid 0.8, and his win shares per 48 were one of the worst on the team as well. He had a subpar PER of 11.2. These are all not good numbers, but you would imagine his turnover percentage of 16 will go down as he gets more used to things. His assist percentage of 21 will go up. He's a point guard, and these things improve. It probably won't happen until 2017, maybe 2018, but in Dynasty, I'm looking at him being a pretty decent guy who can be a top 100. There's a chance he's a top 100 guy this year. That's not crazy talk. I wouldn't be investing in him, assuming that's a positive or an absolute lock to happen. But there's a possibility of it. And I think that this change to running more pick and rolls is definitely going to work in his favor. I can't see it not working in his favor at this point. Saša Vučić, he shouldn't be back in the NBA. Yes, he had a really solid stretch to end the season, which was a surprise to many of us. Because to start the year, he was one of the worst players, if not the worst player in the NBA, and was consistently starting. He averaged 15 minutes a game in 61 games, 5 points, 2.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists. He hit a 3 a game and was a 38% shooter. But he hit 36% of his threes. He was 82% from the line, efficient there. And over the last 20 games, he shot 46% from 3. I feel like that's pretty unsustainable. But he is a good 3-point shooter, and that keeps him having a role on this team. Now, should it be 26 minutes a game like he played over the last 8 games? Absolutely not. 15 minutes a game, 10 minutes a game, not completely horrible depending on who else they bring in. If they bring in a bunch of other young guards, then you don't want them missing out on minutes. So Vučić can get minutes. And with, again, the triangle being de-emphasized and Rambis not being around, the likelihood of Vučić coming back is very low. For fantasy, he offers nothing at this point. We're not going to be drafting him in 20-team leagues. We're not going to be looking at an upwards arrow in Dynasty. Nothing like that. overall, in terms of his contribution to the team last season, it wasn't terrible. He was 10th on the team in win shares, which again is not horrible, but he is a horrible defender. He doesn't offer a positive there, but he was, which I think might surprise some people, he was better in box score plus minus than Aaron Aflalo, Derek Williams, Lance Thomas, and Jerian Grant. So finished ahead of all those guys in those metrics. Still, he shouldn't be back. He shouldn't be playing. He shouldn't be taking minutes away from these players. So interesting to see exactly what they do with Vucic. But I think the Vucic situation is going to be a barometer to how much that Phil is banking on a triangle system, because Vucic was only brought in because he had familiarity with that system. And if he's not retained, then Phil is allowing more of Hornacek to install more of what he wants to do rather than forcing a triangle system down his throat. Kevin Serafin was brought in on a one-year deal, and he was disappointing. I still think that Serafin has got tremendous upside. His fantasy numbers did not show any of that. He was the 365th ranked player in nine cat leagues last year. He only had averaged 11 minutes a game in 48 games, 4 points, 2.5 rebounds, 0.8 blocks, 41 and 83 as his percentages. These are not good numbers, as you're probably well aware. But what happened a lot was they would, and they could never stick to it, one game Kyler Quinn would play 18 minutes, 20 minutes, and Serafin wouldn't play, and that would happen for two games. And then they'd make a switch, and Serafin would play for two games. So Quinn and Serafin both suffered from the whims of the coaching and the whims of the rotation decisions that they made. Now, the fact that Serafin shot 41% this season feels like a complete outlier. His previous 2 years, or all his seasons in the NBA, 45, 53, 46, 51, 51, and then 41 this year. That's such a big drop-off that it just doesn't seem realistic. He's a solid free throw shooter. He's a good shot blocker. He's a decent rebounder, but not a great rebounder. And he's an okay scorer. But with the likelihood of Willie Hernan Gomez coming across, Serafin being an unrestricted free agent, I don't think he's back in New York. But to me, considering that Cole Aldrich is going to leave the Clippers, almost guaranteed, I would love Serafin to head across to the Clippers, be that backup to DeAndre Jordan, play that 20 minutes a night there, and I think he could really thrive. I like him in a lot of situations. I think that he is underrated in the NBA. I do like what he can do. I still think he's got upside. He's been around a while and hasn't really shown much, but he's still only 26, so he's got a couple more years, you know, of prime sort of peak performance left in him, and I think that he can get better. Whether that impacts anything in fantasy obviously remains to be seen. It probably doesn't, but he is a name that I always keep an eye on, and depending on where he falls and where he fits in a situation, 20-team leagues, 250-player rosters, he could easily sneak in there in the end of that sort of situation. Probably won't, but he'd be a name that I keep an eye on because I do think he's got a relatively friendly fantasy game when he gets out there. The problem is it just hasn't happened often enough, and it's been a concern. Now, he was terrible in terms of his advanced stats. He was second last on the team in win shares at a negative 0.2, and it's not easy to be a negative in win shares. He was third last in box score plus minus. He was a horrible negative 5.9 in offensive box score plus minus. His PER was 10.8, and a lot of this is due to the fact that his shooting just dropped off by 10%, basically. That caused a real drop in what he was able to do. Not many guys left on this team now. We're going to talk Lou Amundsen, and I'm going to talk Lou Amundsen for about 2 minutes. He played 29 games at 7 minutes, less than 2 points, less than 2 rebounds, 0.2 blocks, 36 and 52 is his percentages. He should not be in the NBA again. Dean Vasek, I know he's your favourite player. He should not be playing in the NBA again. So Lou Amundsen, the memories have been great. You're a nice guy. I spoke to you at Summer League. All good, but you won't be playing again next season. So Amundsen, he will be toast. Again, obviously no dynasty upside for Lou Amundsen, and he's 33 years old. No need for him to be playing anywhere in the NBA. Cle'Anthony Early had a really poor season. I did have some hope for him, but the 450th ranked player in 9-cat, 443rd in 8-cat is not great. Yes, he only played 17 games and 9 minutes per game, suffered that knee injury. But even when he's been on, or that knee injury in terms of he got shot in the knee, but even when he's been on the court, what has he shown? He's shown basically nothing, and I don't think there's a huge amount of hope for him. Yes, I would extend the qualifying offer to him. No one's going to be throwing a big contract at Early, but he's heading into a third season, so maybe something, but I really don't believe in him. He's 25 years old already. I don't think there's any hope that he ever becomes a top 250 player, and that's it's a pretty low bar to get to there. Next player I'm going to talk about is a player who did not play for the New York Knicks at all, and it's my boy Tony Roden. He is really, really bad. He was probably the worst player in the NBA last season, and yes, he was coming off an ACL injury, but he was just really bad. He is horrible with the ball. He turns it over too much. He can rack up numbers at times, but he needs to be playing 30 minutes a night to do that, and he won't be playing 30 minutes a night. Phil Jackson seems to think that he's going to be, you know, the point guard of the future. That is wrong. He won't be. All you got to do is watch him play for five games and just go, this guy can't do it. He's got no vision. He's a terrible shooter from the field. He's a terrible shooter from three. He's a terrible shooter from the line. He shot 34% last year from the field. He shot 54% from the line. He shot 18% from three. And you might go, you know, don't be too harsh on him. It's only eight games. He was coming back from ACL surgery, but that's basically what he is at all times. Now, if I go look at his other numbers, he's not going to be that bad in the other seasons. He's, you know, he was 40, 67, and 26 the year before that. The year before that, he was 43, 64, and 21. So these are not good numbers. But the thing that concerns me with Roden is his IQ, his basketball IQ, his decision-making. You're shooting 26% from three, which he did in that last season in Philadelphia in 2014-15. 26%. He took 4.7 threes a game. It's a really bad conversion, a horrible conversion. He shot 40% from the field. He took 14.5 attempts per game in less than 30 minutes. And yes, he scored 17 points, but he's a net negative on the team. He is just a really, really bad player, and you can't be good if Tony Roden is playing on your team. He just sucks the life out of an offense. He takes the ball out of better players' hands. He has no vision, distributing skills. He makes the wrong decisions. Yeah, they've given him a go, and maybe he turns it around. I could be completely wrong on Tony Roden. And if for some reason he gets 32 minutes, he is going to have fantasy value, assuming you're punting turnovers and both percentages. He will rack up rebounds. He'll get assists. He'll get scoring. He'll force in 1-3 a game by taking five attempts. And that'll all work for fantasy. But in terms of, and what I like to look at, is the guy actually good, and will he be able to sustain minutes on the court for a long period of time? And the answer to that for me with Roden is absolutely not. Yes, he'll play, and this is the same thing with Terrence Jones last season. He'll play, if he played 30 minutes, he's a top 50 guy, but he's just so bad as a player that how can you guarantee he plays that sort of minutes? You can't, because eventually, as a team tries to get better, they're going to go, thanks, Tone. That was great while you just ran around and dribbled the ball and passed up open players for shots and did everything hero ball style. That's fine. But we want to win more than 10 games. So you can go. And that's my thoughts on Tone Roten. All right, I'm going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to have a look at a couple of overseas stash players that Knicks have got, and then to answer your questions. Of the overseas stashed drafted players the Knicks have got, then answer the questions that you guys had, and then wrap up the show. So let's get straight into it. They've got two main guys I want to talk about, Willie Hernangomez and Louis Labiré. Let's talk Hernan Gomez, who was a teammate of Kristaps Porzingis in Sevilla the season before. He transferred to Real Madrid this season and didn't do a huge amount. He only played 12 minutes a night in his 44 games, started four of them. If you don't know, Hernan Gomez is a center. He's 6'11", he weighs 255. He's got a brother who's likely going to be drafted in the first round this season, I think Juan. Hernan Gomez is his name. He's a little bit smaller than what Willie is. But I still think that Hernan Gomez is going to, from all indications, he's going to be coming over this season to play with the Knicks, and that he'll fill in that role as a backup big man. That's why I think that Kevin Seraphin probably won't be back, because Hernan Gomez comes across and takes that role, and he is going to be a decent backup center. Now, he only averaged 5.5 points for Real Madrid across all their levels of competition, but he's super efficient. He is 67% field goals, 71% from the free throw line. He only averaged 3.4 rebounds, but that's in 11 minutes. You take that up to 25, 26 minutes, we're talking pretty good rebounding numbers. Shot blocking 0.6 blocks in 11 minutes, again, pretty good numbers in limited time. Advanced numbers, win shares, he was a positive 2.7. It's a pretty good number. PER was tremendous, 21.4. Offensive rating, 126. Defensive, 105. So a big difference there. Great block percentage of 5%. Usage of 19. Offensively, defensively, I think that Hernan Gomez can be a solid rotation piece. And he's a guy that you need to look at in dynasty leagues, because he might not have an impact this season. He'll come across, but there's no reason why he wouldn't become a backup to Porzingis, play alongside Porzingis in the next 2 years, and be a guy who gets 20 minutes, maybe pushing to 25 minutes. I think there's a lot to like about him. So he is someone I'd be looking at if my dynasty league allows a stash ability, or if I've got a deep bench, or if your league goes 300 players deep. Hernan Gomez could easily be a top 300 player in the next two or three seasons. Louis Labouré, not so much excitement with him. He's a French guy who was picked two seasons ago. He's 6'10", he's a power forward, he weighs 200. He played in Summer League. He didn't look awesome when I watched him. He looked okay, but not awesome. He only played 10 minutes a game in his four games, averaged 5 points in Summer League, half a block. Over in Europe, he's playing in France at the moment at Paris Levallois. He averaged 8 points a game in 22 minutes. He started 20 of his 33 games. He got 5.5 rebounds. He got a block a game. He shot 41% from three and 57% from the field. So these are pretty okay numbers, but how it translates to the NBA remains to be seen. Win shares, pretty decent numbers in that as well. PER of just under 20, an offensive rating of 120, a defensive rating of 107. Only used 17% of possessions. Decent rebounding numbers. Pretty good shot blocker in terms of shot blocking percentage. True shooting of 61, pretty good in that respect. But if he comes over, he's going to find himself in an uphill battle, I think, to get minutes. The fact that he plays the four helps the Knicks a little bit, because Porzingis, Hernan Gomez, they're fives. Melo will transition to the four, but we don't know how long Melo's going to be around. There's no real other young four on this team who they're developing. So Labouré, no reports that he's coming over this season, but your league has to be really, really deep to consider him. And even then, there's a chance he never comes over, or there's a chance he never really has an impact. So I don't place a huge amount of hope for him. But Hernan Gomez, on the other hand, I'm pretty interested in. Let's talk questions. Iron Man on Twitter at Starks_industry. Can we assume Jerian Grant gains 30 plus minutes next season? No, we can't, but I think it's a fair assumption to think that he goes for 27 at this point. That would be my guess. Again, it's so early. Who knows what's happening with these free agents? But to me, he is, at this point, the current starter at point guard. Daniel Bradley says, do you think the triangle offense will still be the focus by the end of the season? Absolutely not. I don't think it'll be the focus by the start of the season. Dickens at GQ Dickens. Is this the year to let people pick Hassan Whiteside in the top 15 while the Red Rockers steal him, at him being Porzingis, at pick 35? I don't think that people who listen to this podcast are going to be the only ones who are going to be on Kristaps Porzingis next year. Picking Hassan Whiteside in the top 15 is a little bit risky, but I don't think it's a terrible risk. I probably wouldn't do it personally, but it's not a terrible pick. But picking Porzingis at 35, I think, is a really decent pick. As I mentioned before, if you get him outside the top three rounds, I reckon you're going pretty well, because he has got top 20 upside, Porzingis, and huge scope to improve with an offense that I think will suit him really well. Eric Wagner says, does Carmelo hinder the development of Porzingis? I don't think he hinders his development whatsoever. Yes, they're not on the same timeline, but I think that Melo worked really well with Kristaps. I think he helped him tremendously assimilate to the NBA. I think they've become relatively close in the way that a 32-year-old and a 20-year-old from different countries can become close. But I think that they have, yeah, they've melded well together. I think they've been Melo's been really beneficial to what Kristaps can do, and they don't play the same position. Yes, you might play Melo at the 3 and Porzingis at the 4. You might play Melo at the 4, Porzingis at the 5, but there's no situation where they're taking each other's minutes. I'm not worried about Melo taking Porzingis' shots, because Porzingis is not going to be a guy who needs 20 shots a game. That's just not what his game's going to be. I don't think there's any concern, Eric, whatsoever about Melo hindering Porzingis' development. Joseph Diffenbach has the last question of the show. He says, will Hornacek be able to run his own offense, or will they continue using the triangle? I've talked about that before. He will be able to run his own offense, which will include triangle elements. There'll be more speed, more pace, more pick and roll, more pick and pop, but there'll still be triangle in there. And I'm really excited for this Knicks team. I'm excited for Grant. I'm excited for Melo as an underrated player. I'm excited for Porzingis. I want to see Hernan Gomez come across. I want to see Koch get a bigger role. I want to see Langston Galloway thrive. I think there's there's a bit to be excited about as a Knicks fan. If this whole podcast had been talking about Kurt Rambis as the new head coach, I probably would have just set my head on fire and that would have been it. But with Hornacek there, the unstubbornness of Phil to go in a direction that actually makes sense and is a better move is good. Let's see what they do in free agency. Let's see how this roster looks. But there's a lot to be excited about with a couple of young players, in particular Porzingis, which we know what he's like and we know what he can provide moving forward. All right, that is it, guys. You're probably going to see a few podcasts come out in quick succession over the next couple of days because I missed a couple of days. So we're going to have coming up the Bucks show, the Magic show, and the Jazz show. They're the next three podcasts. You'll probably get two of those over the next 2 days. So, as always, if you want to interact with the show, you tweet at me at redrock_bball. You follow Basketball Monster at Basque Monster. And check out Hardwood Paroxysm as well for articles and podcasts. Congratulations to the Cleveland Cavaliers for making the NBA Finals. They have got a really decent chance of beating whoever makes it out of the West, the Thunder and the Warriors. I think that they will be the underdog no matter who they play, but it's going to be a very entertaining finals, whether it's Cleveland Golden State or Cleveland Oklahoma City. Very, very interesting. I'm just glad I didn't have a choice because one of the teams in the East had never won a title. I'm glad they're in there. Really excited to see what the Cavs can do. Really excited for these NBA finals, as should all of you be. All right, we are done. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.